I'm Shalina Tobin, aka Posh Nosh Gal, and today I'm with the highly acclaimed chef, Jordan Bailey. Learning his craft in the southwest of England, Jordan shot to the top table of culinary greats when he became head chef at the 3 Michelin-starred restaurant Maymau in the heart of Oslo. Later, at just 30 years old, he was to achieve the record of the fastest chef ever to receive 2 Michelin stars from scratch with his restaurant Aimsa in his new home in Ireland. Hi, Jordan, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Very, very well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. So the hospitality industry is slowly opening up again. How's the time off been for you?
To be honest, it's been pretty amazing. I think, you know, when we opened this restaurant, you know, we kind of hit the ground running and obviously intentionally, and we kind of didn't stop. So to be honest, like, we kind of welcomed this a little bit to kind of have time to, you know, reflect a little bit and just kind of, you know, when we were opening up again, you know, to have a some kind of fresh eyes and take a step back. So we can kind of look at everything in a bit more kind of detail, and just try and improve the overall experience for the guests and also for ourselves as well, you know, trying to give us a kind of a bit of a balance. So, to be honest, we've been pretty busy during the whole kind of COVID lockdown. So we're kind of 3.5 months off work. We're back to it now, being back for two, it's our third week. So we kind of spent that time in the gardens here. We have beautiful kitchen gardens, a few polytunnels and things. So myself and my sous chef have been taking care of those and just kind of keeping it going, because we didn't want it to kind of go to ruin and come back and then we've got nothing to work with. So we're kind of planting things, not knowing if we was ever going to use it. Luckily we have been able to use most of it, and anything we kind of missed, you know, we've kind of pickled and preserved anyway, so nothing's been gone to waste. We also did a few meals for the hospitals around here, for the doctors and nurses. Because during the lockdown, their canteen shut down, so they weren't getting any food while they're working, and mainly for kind of like the night staff. So me and my sous chef are doing it 3 days a week, doing food that we don't obviously normally do in the restaurant, you know, and plating it in takeaway containers. So it's a bit unusual, but it was good fun, you know, doing 250 meals a day. It's kind of cool to do that, to be honest. It's just nice to help out wherever we can, you know.
That's 250 meals just between you and your sous chef.
Yeah, 3 days a week. Yeah, so it's brilliant. It was fun.
Were you just doing sandwiches, that kind of thing?
No, it's more, obviously, because like I said, you know, we have the gardens here. So we're just trying to utilize all the fresh stuff that we had in the gardens.
Right.
So we did a lot of salads. We actually made a lot of curries and things. We got donated a whole Dexter cow. So we just minced the whole lot and turned it into different things. So they were getting top quality ingredients, you know, but done in a very kind of rustic, homely way, you know, because you can't really do the same thing, you know, that we used to be doing, you know, catering 250 people in a little container. We very quickly found out the kitchen's not really cut out for doing those numbers. You know, we didn't even have, you know, a big enough pan to cook all this stuff at once. We had to have like 3-4 pans on the go. So it's pretty interesting, to say the least.
And what do you think, a new line of business going down the delivery road now that you've done it? What do you think?
Definitely not. It's not for me. It's not for me. You know, it's working for a lot of people here, and I'm, you know, it's pretty cool to see. You know, even ordered a few things myself, especially like the little boxes and stuff they've been giving out and selling. That's been really cool to see, and see people kind of change their kind of, you know, the kind of business program to kind of fit what, you know, the current climate that we're in, you know, because there's a lot of restaurants here that still can't open up, especially in the city, you know, when it's very tourist driven. Of course, you know, we don't have any tourists, so kind of Dublin is pretty much dead, you know, so they're kind of just kind of new kind of ingenious ways to kind of keep, you know, their business going, you know, and just trying to help out where possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So just moving on from that, did you always love cooking from your childhood?
I think not knowing, yes, I did. You know, when I look back, you know, there's a lot of things that I did that, you know, none of my brothers did, for example. I think I just did it, obviously, because I love doing it. You know, I don't really have the romantic story of, you know, my mum was always in the kitchen and slaving away, or even my nan. Like, I've never seen my nan cook. You know, we go around their house for dinner and it's like, it's all like a cold buffet. So, yeah, she's some days she thinks she's the queen, so she doesn't like to get her hands too dirty, but, you know, we love her for that. And then my mum, obviously, you know, we live in it was a very kind of busy household. So obviously, you know, my mum was working, and there's me and my two brothers, and my dad, who's a contractor, so he's out all day. So, like, there's a lot going on, and people having meals at all different times of the day. So kind of, it was always kind of left last minute. But still delicious, you know, in her own little way. You know, but yeah, so I never really had anyone kind of mentoring me from a young age or anything.
So how did you get into it then?
I think if I look back, it's probably to do with my uncle. So my uncle's a chef. He has a hotel and a few different restaurants based up in and around Cheshire. And obviously living up there, you know, we'd see him, you know, over holidays and things. And always kind of fascinated me, you know, that kind of side of it. You know, of course, you know, he started in Cornwall, and it was just cool to kind of hear his stories and, you know, how well he's done. So always kind of fascinated me. And I think the real way that I got into it was more, you know, when you're kind of early teens, you know, looking for a job, you know, your first kind of job to get in a bit of pocket money. You know, I went to my mum and I said, look, mum, I want to get some money in. You know, what do you think I should do? And she said, you know, what do you want to do? And I said, to be honest, I don't mind doing anything. I just don't really want to talk to anybody. I just want to do my job, you know, and just get paid for what I do. And then I'm happy. So like, you know, she obviously like things like, you know, to work on the checkout and very kind of service things. And I was like, no, that's just not for me. She goes, actually, how about if you're in the kitchen, you know, you don't have to really talk to anybody, you know, obviously through her brother, you know, my uncle, she approached the place where he started out, and it was only, you know, 10 minutes away from where we live. So yeah, she got me now on a Friday and Saturday, night, just peeling bags of potatoes and, you know, just doing really mundane things. But I think the thing that kind of hooked me was not the food. To be honest, I don't really remember the food. It was more to do with, you know, the atmosphere of the kitchen and the buzz and like the banter. And, you know, it was almost like a grown up kind of like classroom, you know what I mean? With all your friends, and, you know, it just felt right. Yeah. And then obviously, you know, as things kind of progressed, I actually started working with my dad doing building. And then I realized that I missed it. You know, I missed that kind of atmosphere, and it kind of something stuck within me.
You missed that knife in your hand.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I just missed the atmosphere and just like having like fellow chefs around, a bit of banter and, you know, just, you know, getting down and dirty with them and, you know, just getting all the meals out and things. You know, and being a little bit, you know, kind of, no, just like super busy, and yeah, it's just like, just missed that buzz. Yeah. So I did A levels and things. So I did, you know, like business, communications, graphics, design, because I was aiming to be kind of originally an architect. That's the kind of what I have my goal set on, because it's very kind of artistic. And then I spent 2 weeks in an architect's office and absolutely hated it. Just kind of didn't like sitting down. So that, I think that kind of put me off all kind of office jobs, mm-hmm. Which was kind of good that I learned that at that kind of age. Then it kind of ruled out a lot of jobs. And then I kind of tweaked the courses a little bit and kind of was almost going into marketing. And then to earn money on the side of going through college and doing the A-levels, again, I went back into the kitchen and then just realized, like, this is what I want to do. Like, I don't want to carry on doing it, but I don't like to quit. So I completed the A-levels and then got into my first kind of real kitchen and first proper chef job.
And you had a brilliant start to your career. I mean, you've worked with some of the best Michelin-starred chefs. You were at The Elephant with Simon Holston, restaurants at Bain's as well. What would you say are the key lessons that you learned from both of those chefs?
They're very different, very, very different. So going to The Elephant with Simon, you know, that was obviously my first Michelin star experience, and I didn't, you know, I was very kind of naive and I didn't really know what, you know, what to expect, but I absolutely love that kind of environment, unknowing. And to be honest, I didn't really know too much about Simon. Not until I got there, and obviously the other chefs were telling me, you know, he's, you know, one of the best competition chefs in the country, if not the best. And I never really seen that side of the industry. So that intrigued me. So then I started doing a few competitions with him and on my own. And that was kind of my real first place where they had their own farm. So it was getting a lot of kind of produce straight from the farm and, you know, all the seafood. You know, some days we'd literally just walk down to the harbor and pick it up ourselves and take it into the restaurant. Like, it was such a, it was very beautiful, which moving forward until now, like, I, that really stuck with me. You know, and the way Simon does things, you know, he's always trying to, especially the times that I was there, like, because he was doing Bocuse d'Or, which I also did with him, you know, we went down lots of different avenues and different kind of styles and techniques. So I got to see a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the classics behind Simon is, yeah, all the kind of the very traditional stuff, which I do love. And I think, you know, it's kind of the basics which everybody should learn and, you know, and kind of master before they start diversing into kind of different kind of outlets and different kind of creative options. And then moving to SATS was more of a, again, I just always want to keep upping it. So obviously worked in a one Michelin restaurant, all right, let's go to two. And obviously hearing about SAT and the way the kitchen was run and, you know, having a trial there, like, I love the way that it was very kind of regimented. And again, that fits very well for me. That's how I like to work. And also, you know, with SAT, you know, at the time, you know, he wasn't afraid about, you know, going to the mainland and, you know, sourcing the ingredients there if he thought it was better. You know, and kind of course, you know, with his background, you know, we're using different spices and all kind of stuff that we never used with Simon. So it's nice to kind of, you know, take all like that foundation that I learned with Simon and then kind of apply it to kind of SATS food. And, you know, it really set me up for what, you know, what I had to deliver it with SAT. And then, yeah, doing like all the different projects and things, you know, it kind of, it was the first place where you really kind of got to be kind of creative and show kind of your own kind of personal flair with different things. So yeah, I think, yeah, it was a really nice kind of mix, you know, and I've kind of really adapted both those styles and kind of what we do here as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, talking about setting the bar higher, you moved on to three Michelin starred restaurant with Esben Hombo Bang in, it was at Maymau in Norway. So how did you decide to move to Norway of all places? How did the opportunity come to you?
To be honest, when we actually got an actual week off over Christmas at SATS, and I've been there for 2 years then, and I kind of thought about moving on. So I wanted to use that extra week to go and star somewhere in the world, and hopefully that would kind of set up, you know, the next move. So I sent my CV out to, it must have been 10 different restaurants all around the world, you know, asking if I could do a stage for that week. And Esben come back to me within a matter of days and said, look, I know you've, you know, offered to come for a stage, but I'd love to give you a job, you know, as long as your CV isn't bullshit. And I was like, right, okay, cool. I can promise you it's not bullshit. You know, like, do you want me to come over for a trial? And he's like, no, just start on this date. And I was like, okay.
Amazing. Wow. Yeah, and
to be honest, I didn't really, back then, you know, I didn't know anyone who had ever even been to Norway. I didn't know anyone who worked in Oslo. I didn't know anything about the restaurant, really. At that time, there was only 1 2-minute long video on YouTube, and that was it. So yeah, I kind of chopped myself in the deep end there. And obviously then it was only a two Michelin star restaurant. And then turned off on the day and kind of, yeah, went from there, really.
And what was Esben like to work with?
again, very, very different. And kind of, I'd say he's very, very creative. I think the way me and him think are very differently, but I think that's why we worked very, very well together. So when he kind of, when he comes up with a dish, he kind of thinks how it looks. He kind of goes to the finished article, and then he kind of thinks about what it can be and the flavors and ingredients and things, and then kind of works backwards. Yeah, which I've never come across that before. And actually, thinking back of it, I think that's kind of how Sat works a little bit as well. Obviously very artistic and drawing, and like he gets a picture and then he kind of brings everything else together, whereas I'm very much the other way, you know. And you know, I would see or taste an ingredient and then kind of, okay, what would go with this, and the last thing I think about is what it looks like,
right?
So I, you know, I'd always have, you know, loads of beautiful tasty things in front of me and then just kind of then figure out what it's going to look like. So it's kind of cool to see it from two different ways, and definitely try to adopt both ways now, you know, to try and get an advantage. And I think at Mimo, for me, it was the place where I really found the kind of style of food that I love doing, you know, how it was all from Norway and like hyper local, you know, and kind of just sourcing the best ingredients and just kind of letting that speak for itself, you know, and kind of very natural looking on the plate and just very elegant and simplistic looking. But then there's, you know, days or even months of kind of processes involved behind the dish. Yeah. And obviously, you know, when I got promoted to head chef there, you know, then got the chance to kind of, you know, build the team and, and just kind of give me kind of an insight into, you know, things that you don't see when you're a chef de party running a section. And of course, being in Norway, you know, you're surrounded by some of the best ingredients in the world. Obviously when we got 3 stars, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you were there, I mean, within the first year of you being there, it got 3 stars. How did you feel about that?
It was pretty overwhelming, to be honest. Turning up there when it was 2 star, then yeah, exactly a year later, then we got 3 stars. It was pretty insane. And to be a part of that, you know, is kind of, yeah, almost like a one-off experience to be a part of that journey with, you know, somebody else.
Yeah. And how much of that 3rd star did you feel was your contribution?
None. I think, you know, it's all Espen. I would never take anything away from him, you know. It took 5 years to get to that stage. You know, he also did what we've done and went from nothing to 2, you know, in 14 months or something. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty incredible as well, you know. And then just a few more years and it's 3 stars. So, you know, he was already on that path. I think, you know, if anything that I brought to the table was maybe a bit of security for him, so he could kind of do what he needed to do and not worry about anything else. Yeah. And maybe have that person just to bounce ideas off. You know, I think before I came, it was almost like a one-man band, you know. Right. And I could see that he needed support, you know, and also a person to bounce ideas off and tell him no sometimes, you know. So I think maybe that was my contribution.
Right. And it sounds like such an amazing journey being there. And I think this is where you met your wife, Maiken?
No, we actually met before that. So while I was working at Sat Baines, me and the development chef, we took a week and went to Denmark on like a little food culinary tour.
Right.
And so we ate in, you know, all the places in Copenhagen and then took a car trip out to Henne under Paul Cunningham. And that's where she was working. And she waited on our table. And of course, because you got to travel there for 3 hours, you know, we stayed over the night in the room. We kind of just, you know, didn't really talk too much during the meal. Obviously, you know, she's very professional. But obviously, you know, myself knowing Paul, we got invited into the kitchen and it was somebody's birthday. So they had a few beers. And then we went back, me and the development chef went back to our room, and I went out to get a lighter for him when she walked past to go back to like the staff rooms. And I said, oh, you know, Paul gave us a bottle of champagne. Do you want to come in and have a glass? Because it was on the Saturday nights. They didn't have work the next day. And then, yeah, we just kind of got talking. And then, yeah, then when we left, you know, as you do, add people on Facebook and then just kept up the conversation. And then she came over maybe a month later over to Nottingham. And then, yeah, because at that time in the winter, they only work 3 days a week there. So she had a bit more time than what we had at SATS. So she would always kind of fly over every other weekend. And then, yeah, then been together kind of ever since.
Oh, that's amazing. So did she come to Norway with you as well?
Yeah, so I moved there first. I think I was there for 4 or 5 months before she came.
Right.
And then she finished up at Henne, and then, yeah, and then moved out. And then she opened up a restaurant there with somebody else.
Okay.
And then she worked at Maimo as well. And then she opened up 2 more restaurants. So she's pretty busy when she was there.
So at what point did you realize that you wanted to start out on your own and leave and start your own thing?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think for me, it was kind of, you know, I was obviously, you know, Espen was spending a bit more time, not away from the restaurant, that's not the right word, but, you know, you have other things going on, you know, so you can't be there, you know, every day or, you know, during the day and miss a few services and things, you know, and, you know, kind of built a team up and kind of running it. I was always running it kind of as my own restaurant, you know. And then, you know, you're obviously like developing dishes and things, and, you know, Espen will come and taste it. And it got to a point where he was changing things that I didn't think needed to be changed. And then I kind of, which is obviously fine because it's his restaurant. But then it kind of just got me thinking, like, you know, I think I'm ready to go out on my own and just show my own personal style, you know, without being tweaked by somebody else, and just kind of, you know, put myself out there and to get criticized. You know, and I think I built up enough skills to do that, you know, not just cooking, but more of like a, like management skills, you know, and, you know, cause before I came to Maimo, it went through a lot of staff. Every week, pretty much, there was somebody leaving or going or new one turning up and things. You know, it wasn't a very kind of healthy atmosphere. So that's kind of the first thing that I wanted to kind of put in place when I was made head chef, you know, and the team that while I was there, you know, stayed with us for 2 years until I left. So I think, yeah, taking all that stuff that I learned there, I knew deep down that I was ready. You know, I was hungry for the next challenge. Yeah, and I didn't feel like I wanted to kind of work under anybody else.
Yeah. And so how did you choose Ireland of all places?
Couple reasons. So I think the biggest factor was, so when I left Maimo, you know, obviously got the feelers out there and spread the word that, you know, that I was looking for something. You know, I was very fortunate to get quite a lot of offers from all around the world. And it kind of put us in a very fortunate position where we kind of, you know, narrow it down. So we kind of, me and my wife come up with a list, you know, of things that we wanted personally from this. And those things were more like, you know, we wanted to be, because my wife's Danish and obviously I'm English, you know, within, you know, an hour and a half flight from both families. So that ruled out, you know, say in Asia or Australia or anywhere like that.
Right.
And then another big factor was we wanted to live or have the restaurant not in a city, but close to a city. So we kind of, you know, we could dip in and out when needed. Because the reason behind that is that, you know, obviously living in a city in Nottingham and in Oslo, I found it a little bit, Oslo not so much because you're very close to nature. It's a very small city, but having that nature around and constantly walking through it on the way to work, or, you know, if you just need some inspiration, you just go outside in the garden. Like, that was very important for me. And I struggled to find inspiration if I was walking, say, through London. You know, like, I don't get my inspiration that way. And of course, you know, it's a very creative job. So, you know, I need to keep that fueled. So for me, that was very important. So, you know, that got rid of a lot of places, especially like in London, or if it was staying in Oslo or Copenhagen. So I was left with 5 or 6 different places. And what intrigued me to come here was, while I was at Miami, my sous chef was Irish. And ever since he started, you know, he kept on going on about how amazing Ireland was and kind of how untapped it was, and how there was nothing doing what we were doing at Mimo there, or at that kind of level. So that always kind of, that stuck with me. So when, you know, a place in Ireland popped up, it's the first place we come and see, and we jumped on the plane and come over and visit it. And when we got here, yeah, just taken back by how beautiful the country was, how beautiful the people are, and also, you know, the property that we're on. And to be honest, it reminded me very much of Cornwall, you know, and the way it looks and the way it feels, and also the people. It feels like a big village more than a country sometimes, which I love coming from Cornwall. I think if you grew up in a city, maybe you wouldn't like it too much. But coming from Cornwall, you know, it felt very familiar. So I felt very relaxed kind of instantly.
Felt at home.
Yeah, so it was kind of an easy choice, to be honest.
So you actually travelled all over Ireland, didn't you, looking for the perfect place?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did indeed. We travelled pretty much the whole island, to be fair. But where we're situated right now is that perfect balance between, you know, being in the country. Like, when you're here, you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere. But then if you jump on the train just down the road, you know, 20 minutes, you're in the center of Dublin. So it's a very happy medium. Right. You know, I do think probably the West Coast is probably more beautiful. You know, and you have that direct connection to probably some of the better fish on that coast, but it's only 2 hours away, you know? I don't think it has the infrastructure to do what we do here,
right?
Because it is a bit more remote.
So let's talk about your restaurant, Aimsa. It's at Cliff at Lyons, and it's such an interesting name, as it doesn't have a direct translation into English. So what does it mean to you?
So basically, it's a Irish word for weather and time, which basically translates into kind of season. So basically, what we wanted, one word that summed up everything that we do here. So, you know, what we do here is we only serve Irish produce. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't get anything off the mainland. So we don't, you know, use things like, you know, chocolate or olive oils. We don't use citrus fruits, you know, all these things that, you know, are very kind of, you know, second nature to a chef to kind of grab, you know, we don't have that. You know, and even taking it even a step further, even than what we did in Norway, is, you know, we don't use anything that relies on kind of artificial environments to grow. So for example, you know, you can grow chilies here, peppers, you know, all in polytunnels, but if you take that polytunnel away, it's not going to survive. So, you know, bearing that in mind, you know, so we don't use things like that. So try and stay true to where we are, you know, and the terroir that we're in, to try and reflect a kind of new kind of Irish cuisine or something, maybe. You know, and obviously, you know, so based on that, you know, we stay super seasonal. You know, we use a lot of stuff from our own gardens that we plant ourselves. You know, so we're forced to stay, yeah, super seasonal and super local.
Yeah. And so with the property itself, you did a full strip out and development. How did you find that?
Tough.
It took 2 years, right?
Yeah. Just under. And, you know, it was very romantic at first. And then there's a lot of blood, sweat and tears in between. And, you know, You know, and things take a lot longer and a bit more expensive than what you think at the start.
A tiny bit of your architecture background. Were you able to use that?
Yeah, I think so, to be honest. Like, there's a lot of hand sketching going down. And of course, you know, we had architects and a few designers on board as well to kind of piece together all of our ideas.
Must have been amazing to have that knowledge, though. Just, you know, a little bit.
It definitely come in handy, for sure. You know, I'm very creative as well, and you know, obviously I think we always need a woman's touch to kind of finish things off. But no, it was incredible to kind of, you know, exactly build it from the ground up, you know. But I think I was definitely very naive to, you know, I thought it would be not a lot easier than what I thought, but there's a lot more parts to a restaurant than what you initially see, you know, what plates you're going to serve the food on. You know, when you got to think about, you know, what kind of, you know, extraction do you need, or, you know, what kind of, you know, AC units, and I just like things that you don't even think about.
Yeah.
You know, but it was nice to have my wife, obviously, you know, 50-50 in this, you know, so I could almost forget about the kind of the front of house operations. You know, so she, you know, all the glassware and the tables, and she must have sat in probably over 100 chairs to find the right one. And, there's, you know, obviously, you know, we want it to be absolutely perfect from day one, you know, and feel like that restaurant's been there for decades, you know, that it's already been, you know, thought about, you know, and just have it at the highest standard that we can start with from the get-go, you know, not wait 2-3 years and then do something else. And like, we wanted it to be perfect from day one, you know, which takes a lot to do that. And it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of research. So we spent, the best part of a year traveling around Ireland to source, you know, not only produce and suppliers, but, you know, different pieces and crafts people that we could find, you know, to make plates or tables, or, you know, all the wood in the restaurant, and, you know, find Irish materials to build it. You know, Irish woods and marbles and stones and slates and, you know, everything. You know, there's a lot of work. So even though, you know, we gained 2 stars in 4 months, on paper, you know, it was almost 2 years work, you know.
Yeah, there is a lot that goes behind it, and I think that you already had the foundations with you and your wife. And like you said, she does front of house, and you do everything else that goes on with all the food and the cuisine. So it's really a perfect partnership. And I think I read somewhere that she's a sommelier as well.
Yeah, she's a sommelier, she's front of house. She does everything. She does anything but cook. And even that she's pretty good at, to be fair. She kind of pieces everything together. I know without her, you know, we wouldn't achieve what we have done today. Yeah, it's been amazing to share that kind of journey with her, you know, and to kind of, it's nice to have that person that you can 100% trust and rely on, because they're, you know, husband and wife, you know, you can't get any more kind of trusting than that. You know, and to have that person that, you know, really has your back and that can give you space to be very creative and just focus on the food. I think, you know, if I was to do this on my own, you know, and to think about, you know, all the front of house things and, you know, all the kind of workings behind the restaurant that goes into it, and it would be very overwhelming. And kind of the food almost becomes secondary. So to have her is an absolute blessing.
Yeah, match made in heaven. I mean, you mentioned that, you know, you got the stars within the first few months of opening up. I mean, you set the record for being the fastest ever restaurant to achieve 2 Michelin stars from scratch. So how did you feel about that? Tell me about the moment that you both found out.
To be honest, it's still very, very surreal. I don't think it still has sunken in, and you know, I don't really want it to sink in, because you know, you just want to keep going and going. Definitely COVID, you know, helped with kind of to reflect on it a little bit. But yeah, so obviously, you know, we opened up, And yeah, did the first week, but then on the Wednesday of our second week, so we only been open 4 days prior to that, we had our first mission inspector in. Yeah, exactly. And you know, we obviously knew that because he announced at the end of the meal, and you know, had a bit of a conversation with him. And yeah, to be honest, we were just very overwhelmed that we were even on their radar at that point, at that early on, you know, second week of opening. It was pretty pretty surreal. And it just kind of gave us the confidence that, you know, we're on their radar, you know, we're on the right track. But realistically, we, you know, we didn't think that we would be up for consideration for that year's guide because of the time frame. And even himself said that, you know, they were a little bit annoyed that we opened so late because a few things went wrong with the build and stuff. So it kind of delayed us by almost 6 months, you know, that they might not have enough time to kind of come back and review multiple times. So it's almost like a double-edged sword with that one. Like, it was amazing to have him there, but then also to be told that, you know, maybe you're not going to be have enough time to get in the guide. But then, you know, it's still amazing that they still made the effort to come out and fly over to Ireland, especially to kind of come and eat that dinner. So yeah, it was super positive. And then, to be honest, you know, we don't know who we had in and how many and whatever else, because nobody announced after that. But then a month before the guide or the launch and the ceremony was taking place, we got an email saying that we've been invited. So yeah, obviously very happy about that. But we never really thought that, you know, two stars were on the cards, because we never even thought one star would have been on the cards because of the time frame. So obviously, you know, turning up at the event and, you know, thinking that, you know, we must have one star in the bag if they invited us, unless it's some sort of weird, sick joke. So yeah, obviously sitting down there with my wife to my side of me, and we had a load of Irish chefs behind us, and to the side of us, we had Paul Cunningham in front of us, Nathan Outlaw, Simon Holstone. Like, it was pretty special to be surrounded by all these people. Yeah. And then how they did it last year was very different from what I've seen on TV, or, you know, when they live streamed it previously, where they would kind of, you know, now we're going into the one stars, you know, it means this and that, and then they do that, and then they stop, and then they explain what two star means, and then they do the two stars. Whereas last year, it just flowed. There was no stopping to explain what two star meant. It just went from, you know, all the ones and then straight into the twos. So when the first thing I seen was, you know, our dish kind of floating around on the screen, and of course, you know, I recognized my own dish. So I just like tapped Mike on the leg and I was like, okay, you know, up you go. And then she kind of burst out crying. And I was like, whoa, you know, I didn't expect it to kind of hit her that hard, you know, because you kind of knew that what was coming. Yeah. And then, so I kind of sat back down again and looked up, and then that's when I seen the two stars. And then, yeah, I had a bit of a wobbly moment as well.
Brilliant. And then,
to be honest, like, Paul and Nathan had to kind of literally pull us up and kind of push us out towards the stage. And then obviously on stage and talking to them, but I don't remember anything about that. And I still haven't watched it back because I'm pretty sure it's probably terrible. And then, just obviously very overwhelmed with, you know, everyone congratulating us. And obviously when we get back in the team and we live streamed it for the team and right there in the ceremony as well. And they had their own little party here and things, which is really cool. They could kind of share that moment.
Yeah.
It was,
I'm not sure.
It's pretty unbelievable, to be honest. And it still is.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I've never heard of it. So it's, you know, it's such a fabulous achievement. And you've worked so hard and fully deserved. So congratulations on that. So just a little bit more about the business. So you're offering accommodation packages as well. How much emphasis are you giving to the whole experience, combining the produce and the landscape, that kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, so the guest journey for us is, you know, the most important thing that we've kind of focused on, you know, so we're trying to work very closely with the property to try and get everything kind of married together. you know, in the rooms that are associated with us, you know, we put, you know, some little surprises in there that kind of gets them excited about the meal before, you know, they dine with us. You know, and obviously, you know, using all the kind of flowers and things from the property to fill the rooms and the restaurant. And so the packages are working out very, very well. And I think it's a very good deal for the guests and the guests as well.
How many rooms do you have?
Oh, that's a very good question. It's changed very recently. I think it's around 22.
Okay. That's a good number.
Yeah, so it's not huge, which is nice. And even the way it's broken down, you know, I hate to use the word hotel because it paints completely the wrong picture of what we have here. It's a village, basically. So every kind of outlet is a different building. So, you know, like the reception would be a separate building to what we are in, and, you know, all the guest rooms are all kind of different buildings, and it looks like the reason why I fell in love with it, like a kind of Cornish village, pretty much. You know, they're all kind of stone-clad buildings with like roses. It's very, very romantic, I'd say. You know, and obviously to have the gardens and, you know, an orchard and polytunnels and stuff, like, it just adds the kind of, you know, to the guest experience, you know. And also branching off this year, you know, we're looking to get, you know, some chickens and pigs and stuff, because we have a bit of land down the back that we can kind of put them in, like a little woodland. Just trying to always kind of evolve the whole guest experience, you know, down to the breakfast and things that the guys serve.
And what are bookings looking like at the moment? Are they coming in?
They're coming in for sure, yeah. I wouldn't say it's a problem, but it's pretty crazy the amount of bookings that we receive.
Oh, that's good to hear.
So, obviously, to do with COVID, you know, we've moved these people over the last 3.5 months to the next 3 months. We're actually not opening up our booking system probably for the next couple months, because we're already full, pretty much. Yeah. Well, not pretty much, we are full. You know, we're even trying to schedule people in maybe even for next year, because we're pretty much full for the rest of the year. You know, and that's mainly to do with, you know, of course, the demand, but that we've gone from a 24-seater restaurant now to a 16. So, you know, what was 3 months bookings is probably now 4 months bookings, because we have to stretch out a bit more. We're very fortunate that, you know, people were obviously happy to move their booking to now. So we haven't really lost anybody, which is nice, and we can kind of keep up that deal. But, you know, obviously we don't have any new bookings to offer right now.
It's interesting, because a lot of people that, you know, they've cancelled their holidays, so, you know, they're looking to go to places like yours, you know, closer to home, you know, to feel safer. So it's great that you're open for that kind of thing, but I guess people have to wait.
Yeah, I think yeah, we're definitely full between now and probably end of September, October. And then we'll probably open up the bookings for November, December, when we get closer to it. But we're still moving people that we had to cancel, you know, so obviously they get priority before we start opening up the bookings again. Hopefully November, December, we should have some more bookings available. So people don't have to wait too long.
And I love your business model, with the whole kind of, you know, you stay there and you have the dining experience. There's a lot of other chefs that are doing a very similar thing as well. Who from the industry inspires you?
I think based on that model, you know, the only person, the only restaurant that, you know, I've had, you know, I can gain inspiration from that is probably Sats. You know, I love the way that, you know, it was restaurant with rooms, and you know, I love that, you know, even though it was kind of in the city, it was a little bit out of the city, you know, and it came more of like a destination, and people got more invested into the kind of the journey that they're going to go on. It's not just like, you know, you're coming out for a business lunch, or, you know, I like that people, you know, maybe do a bit of research before they come, and, you know, they kind of give themselves over to us to kind of take care of everything. And, you know, they're fully invested when they come here. You know, and they fully get behind what we're doing and try to understand it, and, you know, and can fully relax and enjoy it as well. You know, they don't have to think about, you know, I've got something later to do, or, you know, we need to go have dinner here and go for drinks somewhere else. And I like people to be here and just kind of enjoy it as much as they can. So yeah, I definitely take a lot of inspiration from, you know, how Sat did it. And, you know, when you arrive at reception, you know, the little treats and stuff, you get all these little details, you know, which I wouldn't have known about if I never worked there. So yeah, definitely from Sat. You know, I think, you know, also closer to home back in Cornwall, you know, I think what Paul Ainsworth is doing is very inspirational. You know, how he's kind of, you know, branched down to different outlets and, you know, and nailed every single one of them. I think he's definitely got something very, very special down there. And I'd say I'm probably pretty jealous of it, to be honest, as well, being back in Cornwall. You know, it's still my home.
How often do you get to go back?
Not very often, to be honest.
Do you think you'll ever just shut shop and then go back and set up there?
Not now, for sure. You know, we're definitely fully invested here, and you know, we still want to achieve a lot more here. Mm-hmm. We definitely have the potential to do it. But yeah, never say never. You know, that's where all my family are. You know, I still have a lot of connections there. You know, I still chat to people like Paul, and you know, just to keep my finger in the pie down there. You know, but Cornwall is a tricky place for a restaurant. You know, it is super seasonal. You know, there is no big city that you can kind of, you know, rely on to be there throughout the year. Again, that's why, you know, I kind of admire Paul and what he's done and how he can kind of keep it going all year round. Like, I'd say it's very hard. But again, you know, it also shows me that it is possible. So yeah, never say never.
Well, you've certainly made your mark where you are. So, I mean, it's really, really brilliant. And I can't see you leaving anytime soon anyway, like you said. So so we're just kind of coming to the end of our interview. I just had one last question for you, which is, tell me something about yourself that I couldn't possibly know.
Ooh, that is a... To be honest, like, I don't know. That's a tough one.
It can be personal. It doesn't have to be cooking related.
Yeah, well, to be honest, like, you know, having your own restaurant and kind of running it day to day, you know, it kind of takes up all your free time. You know, there's definitely nothing that I'm hiding secretly behind anybody. But I'd say, you know, one of my other probably biggest passions, and I think if I didn't cook, and if I probably knew this at an earlier age, I probably would have went into maybe motorsport.
Oh really?
Yeah, I think I've always loved cars. I like kind of, yeah, engines and like how all these things work, and anything kind of high adrenaline. You know, so very avid Formula One kind of fan. If I would have started again, you know, when you start karting at 6 years old or whatever, you know, I think, and I never knew anything about cooking and my uncle wasn't a chef, like, I would love to explore that avenue. Yeah. And I think I'd have been pretty good. You know, I'm pretty good driver.
Cool. Well, you've mentioned being romanticism and being romantic quite a few times.
Oh, yeah.
What is the most romantic gesture that you've ever done for your wife, Megan?
Probably, of course, there's lots. But if I could pick one, probably last year for her birthday. So this was before we opened the restaurant, so we had a bit more time. So I packed her a bag the night before we woke up, and I said, you know, I packed your bag, get in the car, we're going to the airport. And I took her to Paris, because she's always wanted to go see Moulin Rouge. So I took her there. We had a long weekend there, took her to see Moulin Rouge and just ate in a load of cool places. So maybe there's something in there for me as well, but she definitely didn't expect it.
And how was Moulin Rouge? Was it a good show? Did you guys enjoy it?
Incredible. Yeah, no, it was very, very well done. Very, very well done. Highly recommend it. Highly recommend it.
Brilliant. Well, I'll keep that in mind. Thank you so much for your time, Jordan. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Guys, if you wanted to follow Jordan, he is on Instagram at JordanBailey_chef, and I'm at PoshNoshGal. Thanks, Jordan. Take care.
Pleasure. Thank you.